Straight from the heart of Judea, it's Tuesday Night Live with Jeremy Gimpel and Ari Abramowitz.
Hey, everybody, welcome. This is exciting to be here. Tuesday Night Live with Judea, Ari and Jeremy. All right, so I want to get right to it because we had an amazing experience that can only have been experienced in the Judean Mountains, because we are literally the last of the mountains before the drop to the Judean Desert and the Dead Sea. And we live way out there where there's not really that much light pollution. So we see stars every night. And Saturday night, the rockets are being fired from Iran, and they just crossing right over our heads like a spectacle like I've never seen. And I didn't even see any of it.
You didn't even see it. So what are you doing?
I saw out of my window, and then I just decided to go back to bed. But what I wanted to share with you was a lot of downloads have happened since then. And I think that that's what I think there's a lot of lessons that need to be learned, a lot of steps that need to be taken. And I guess I'm going to pass it off right now to Ari. I'm going to ask you, Tachlis, explain to us, because Ari went into full military mode. He had his uniform on. He was literally ready for Armageddon. He was, and I was just hysterical that my response was to go back to bed. I don't think we could have responded in a more different way. But Ari, if you could just kind of give your side of the story, I think that would kind of enlighten us all.
All right. So very briefly, I don't want to dig too deep into what happened because I could go moment by moment, play by play, but Shabbat ends. We were told that it could be on Shabbat. It wasn't on Shabbat. And Shabbat ends, and then all of a sudden we find out within an hour of Shabbat ending, we have hundreds of weaponized drones, intercontinental ballistic missiles on the way from Iran. And everybody is considering the fact that this could be the moment, at least for me. Maybe other people are like, oh, this is just another attack. But for me, this is like, this could be the war that ends all wars. And it really could have gone there. Now, since the war, there have been a lot of perspectives on how this may have been just theater, you know, as much theater as it was war. You know, they used to say the Pacific Theater or the, you know, different theaters of war. But I think actually like this felt on some degree in retrospect like it was a theater, that Iran gave the U.S. a heads up, who gave Israel a heads up. And there was an element of this whole thing that was somewhat choreographed. And while there definitely is some truth to that, do you want to go into that later, Jeremy? Well, we're going to do it. I just want to tell my story. Go into that part of it.
Okay.
Because that's an important piece that we need to jump into. But from the moment I saw the missiles on the way over, to me, it was like, this is real. All I thought about was protecting my family, protecting our farm, period. So I prepared my safe room, the mattresses, baby formula, creams and ointments. My little boy is in the throes of the chicken pox. He's 1 year, 11 months old, cute as anything, head to toe in chicken pox. Like what could God be dealing me right now than a new Armageddon, nuclear war, boy with chicken pox? And anyways, so everything was in order. And then I was like, okay, I could either keep preparing, but this is the time for prayer, for tefillah. I poured my heart out to God. I read some Tehillim, some Psalms. That, by the way, they're written by King David during his times of distress in these mountains that we're sitting in right now. So that in and of itself comforted me. It strengthened me. And then we started hearing booms outside. Shay, my wife and I, booms. Like for within a minute or two, then we heard the sirens go off. Seven years.
Our house shook a little bit.
Yeah. 7 years went by. I've never once heard the sirens out here. So we hustled the kids into the safe room. And, you know, I thought it was important that I be in there to encourage the family. I actually put out a little message about this whole story, so I'm going to make it very tight right now. But after being in there for a minute, I realized, no, this is not the place for me. It wasn't a macho thing. I just felt like I needed – so first of all, something is emasculating about sitting in a safe room. I don't know. Maybe you felt the emasculation. Maybe you're just an emasculated guy in general. So it doesn't like – but I couldn't be in the safe room like – something felt nebby about it.
I wanted to go back to bed. Tehila forced me into the safe room.
Okay, so you sat in the safe room while I was protecting our families, patrolling the farm. Anyways, it was like an instinct of mine. I had to be outside. So I walked outside and looked up in the sky, and it was marvelous. It was breathtaking. Massive airplane-sized missiles being intercepted, missiles shooting up. Can you guys hear? Yeah, okay. Missiles shooting up, just intercepting those, and you know, I could have thought, oh my God, there's going to be shrapnel the size of an AK, 747 coming down, but I was just so captivated. You know, there's this ancient Jewish teaching that each nation has its own guardian angel. Ishmael, the Arab world, they have theirs. Edom has theirs. I felt like I was watching a war in the celestial realm, like a war of the angels. That's just what it felt like. Anyways, there were no casualties. There were very little damage. Projectiles, they were intercepted, some by the U.S., some by Jordan, some by Saudi Arabia, but mostly by Israel. Now, Jeremy, I don't know if you saw this, but many are pointing out the, you know, the spineless sort of perfidious role the U.S. played in all of this, giving a wink and a nod, greenlighting the attack on Israel from Iran, at the same time intercepting some of the missiles on behalf of Israel. It's just such like a sniveling, backstabbing, like whatever happened to like integrity and strength and courage, that is not the America that I see right now. But anyways, the administration, obviously, I feel like the people of America are a totally different story. But there definitely was some level of coordination with the U.S. and other countries in the region.
Can we just talk about that first?
Yeah.
Really important to understand.
Yo, yes.
Coordination, meaning America and Iran have a direct line of communication. America just lifted the sanctions off of Iran that Trump put, giving them billions of dollars. Iran has...
Leaving them with sanctions that needed to go somewhere, and that's where we come in.
Yeah, they give it to the settlers. And so now Iran has been emboldened, have been enriched. It's in Iran's interest to keep Biden in office, obviously. So Biden and Iran are literally working together now. And look at this beautiful picture that they've painted. Iran gets to retaliate against Israel. Israel gets to show how wonderful its army is because it was able to shoot down all of the missiles. Biden can now show, look what he did. He stood strongly aside Israel without really doing anything, meaning it worked out perfectly for all of the puppet masters that are at play here, puppeteering away.
With their own very myopic interests.
And I mean, ultimately, and I think eventually I'm going to get to that in just a little bit, but the master of all puppets is really directing the show here. And things are unfolding in a way now that I've never felt Geula as much as I'm feeling.
Define your terms, dude.
I'm saying that the world is about to enter into a new stage of history, and that's going to happen this year. I think Pesach coming up now, it's just a big deal. Like, in some ways, a corner has been turned. This local conflict in Gaza has now gone global, and there's no really turning back. Meaning, now we have Iran, we have Hezbollah, we have Yemen. They're attacking Israel at the same time. Like, this is like a next stage in the process of this upcoming world war. But what's so amazing when you think about the world war is you would understand that America and Russia are these two power players, and they're at war with the Ukraine. Iran has sided with Russia and China, and instead of backing Israel and strengthening America's ally in the Middle East, the Biden administration has decided to tie Israel's hand behind its back, try to sort of snivel up to Iran, and in this most unbelievable confluence of events, it turns out now that all nations of the world are in one way or another aligning themselves against Israel. That is remarkable, because when the prophets promised that that would happen, you have to ask, why would all nations ever gather together for any agenda? Nations have their own agendas. There's constantly power plays. Where has there ever been a scenario when all nations could possibly potentially come together in order to weaken Israel? And we're actually watching the unfolding scenario right before our eyes.
Yeah, you know, what concerns me the most about all of this is the following tweet. It's from someone in the government, but it doesn't matter. This person is not necessarily just a person. It's an idea. And he was making, he put out a tweet. His name is Alon Evyatar. And it was in response to this article. It says, FS Mem 221, 0 out of 221, the historical feat of Israel bringing down 221 of these, you know, projectile drones, ICBMs, etc. And he wrote, Ein Elohim, Vein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vein Nisim. There is no God, and the Holy One, blessed be He, there is, He doesn't exist. There are no miracles, no rabbis, and not even a note on the wall. There are scientists. Yeah, on the coattail, the Western Wall. There are scientists, there are engineers, there are pilots, there are fighters, and there are course studies. That's it. That's what he wrote. And that was my greatest concern, is people in Israel, the state of Israel, actually getting a swelled head because of this, taking credit for this. And that is just, would be such a tragedy. And it's, you know, I saw this, a physics professor that I wanted to read what he wrote. And he wrote that, I quote here, he said, it was nothing short of a miracle, the whole thing. He said, scientific proof that what happened on the 6th of Nisan was nothing short of a miracle. He said, I want to share something that's much more than a feeling, something that comes from a real calculation. What happened in Israel on last Motzei? By the way, he worked in Israel defense industry. He was a high-ranking person. He said, what happened on Israel on Motzei Shabbat after Shabbat was nothing less than a miracle, the scale of the splitting of the Red Sea. Of course, referring to the Exodus that we're about to mark on Passover coming. He wrote, I'm a professor of physics, and I worked for several years in the defense industry in Israel, in projects that are still cutting-edge technologies of the defense of the state of Israel. When I look at what happened on Motzei Shabbat on a scientific level, it simply cannot happen statistically. The likelihood that everything, but really everything, works out does not exist in complex systems like the defense system that were used to defend Israel from the massive Iranian attack. These systems have never, but never, not only in the state of Israel, been tried in real time. I took a pencil and divided into the calculations to check the statistic probability that such a result would materialize. The large number of events that had to be handled when each missile or UAV is handled independently, that is, human error or some deviation of one's operation is not offset by other successful operations, compounds the chance of making a mistake. With all the high technologies, a breach was expected in the defense of the skies of the state of Israel. Even if we got 90% protection, it would have been a miracle. What happened is that everyone but everyone, the pilots, the systems operators, and the technology operators, acted as one man at one moment in total unity. If this is not an act of God, then I no longer know what a miracle is. It is greater than the victory of the Six-Day War and the War of Independence. Those wars can also be explained through natural events, but the rescue that took place for the people of Israel on Motzei Shabbat is simply impossible naturally. I believe that this miracle saved the lives of many people from Israel. If the defense systems had failed to intercept a number of cruise missiles, the result would have dragged us into a very complex war. I wouldn't bet that the next time it will work like this without divine supervision. I wouldn't bet the next time it will work like this without divine supervision. The simple proof of what I said is that the managers of the defense industries who develop and manufacture these systems guarantee no more than 90% success. And we all saw with our own eyes 99.9. Thank you, Hashem. His name is M. Abutbol. Anyways, to me, that's like, that speaks truth, because even sometimes I think we get dragged into these conspiracy theories that maybe there's truth to them. I'm not anti-conspiracy theory. I believe in my share of them. But I do believe that it's coming from a place of needing to understand things, needing to control, some level of control, that there's some cabal that is like putting this all together. But even if you do believe that there is an orchestration here, this is a real battle of light and darkness that goes back thousands of years that is playing out now. October 7th wasn't a wink and a nod. There was no orchestration there. That was like a massacre of a horrific torture like we've never seen since the Holocaust and probably all the way to it. This is a real war, and something like this can get out of control very fast. And I think that that's what we're about to see soon. I think we're seeing the groundwork being laid for a absolutely history-changing, mind-expanding move in world history.
When you read that tweet, because I did not see that tweet, although I did read that thing from the physicist from the Israel Defense, what is it, the Ministry of the Air Force Defense Ministry, that physicist that wrote that, it's just incalculable. It's like impossible that all of the rockets and all of the drones, all of them would have been shot down. It's like it's a miracle. But not only is that a miracle that everyone worked out and there was no human error and that all the systems were go and everything worked out in the most marvelous way, that's one level of a miracle. The second level of a miracle is that these defense systems, not only were they not, why were they not tested? Why were they not tested in Israel and not tested anywhere in the world? Why? Do you know why? Because they're brand new. Of course. So you're like just in time that the engineers finally put together the newest system of the laser being able to propel the thing. Exactly then, that's when we're attacked with 300 ballistic missiles from Iran, right as it's finally operational. They're not even tested yet. But imagine the timing that had to come into that. And then on top of that, where do ideas come from? Who gave these engineers the insights and the innovation and the ideas to come up with the technology to begin with? Meaning, if we don't ultimately somehow give gratitude, recognition to the creator, imagine that's all that's being asked of us right now. In fact, I would posit that everything that's happened in all of Jewish history, everything that's happening in modern Jewish history from October 7th until today is actually the creator of the world waiting for the believers around the world to actually recognize him, to turn to him, to appreciate the miracle of Israel. And just in either way, ultimately, that revelation is going to come, meaning a time where our consciousness is going to be changed, elevated, our priorities are going to change, the whole world. I have a dear friend of mine that came out to the farm. He is originally from Tennessee, and now he lives in the Shomron, and he works helping farmers all day long. He was here today, Nate Waller. And he hadn't left Israel for 2 years. And a family member of his got married, and he flew back to America after 2 years of being in Israel. And he's been in Israel through like tough times, serious times. And he was telling me that he went back to the United States, and he's just like, you know, a good old Christian boy from Tennessee. He's like, as American as you can get. And he's like, I don't recognize that country. I don't understand those people. They are all walking around in an alternative universe. They're all distracted with the ball game. They're all like thinking about everything else other than what needs to be thought about. And this wake-up call is coming. And in some ways, it's sort of it seems to be this slow process of awakening. Now, I heard terrible news that 50 people from the Nova Music Festival since October 7th, the survivors, committed suicide. Carolyn Glick actually posted that. And then a few minutes before this podcast, she said, oh, that's not exactly true. Those stats are not true. But I was thinking about the trauma that some people have committed suicide. So a lot of people now are on
serious PTSD.
Oh my gosh, PTSD. Half this country right now is PTSD from the families of the hostages, families of the soldiers. I don't know anyone in Israel at this point that doesn't know someone close to them that's been killed since October 7th. And so the whole country is like something is breaking within us. It's like our hearts are being broken, our paradigms are being broken. And in Kabbalah, what they talk about is an idea of Shvirata Kelim, that the vessels that we currently have are broken in order for us to build new vessels, bigger vessels, to receive a greater amount of light. And that is the process that we're going through. You know, because, you know, we sort of celebrated Purim and now we're into Passover. So we're in this in-between period. And I keep on thinking about the opportunity that Mordechai and Esther had. And they go to the king and they're like, Haman, this guy, he's evil. And the king is like, okay, whatever you want. And they're like, well, can we rescind the order that he asked to kill us? And he's like, no, we're not allowed to really rescind the order, but you can write your own order. Write whatever you want, sign it and seal it with my seal, the king. And you know what Mordechai and Esther didn't write? They didn't write, let's call for a ceasefire. And they weren't even attacked. They were just threatened with being attacked. And they called on all of the Jews to rise up and defend themselves. And that's the celebration of Purim. And it took them to rise up and act. And then we shifted in to Passover. Where in Passover, you know, we don't really do much, kind of let God take care of things. That's why I just felt the whole thing was such an orchestrated joke. I went right back to bed. I was in the safe room for maybe 7 minutes, and then we went right back to bed. It felt inauthentic. It didn't feel like the right time. And if that was happening, then God is going to fight our wars for us, and those missiles will be shot down. But I find something really interesting. When the Jewish people leave Egypt, are you listening to this?
Yeah, I'm listening to everything you're saying.
when they left Egypt, it says Chamushim alu bnei Israel me'eretz Mitzrayim. Chamushim, what does that mean? Chamushim.
Chamushim, either they have their weapons on them, they're armed, or one fifth.
Or one fifth. Rod, the Midrash says only one fifth made it out of Egypt, but that four fifths were left behind. Now, the pshat, though, just like the simple reading, chamushim means they're armed. They left armed. And I think about that, why did they have to leave armed? I mean, in some ways, that's a message, meaning God took care of business. They had a pillar of fire. They had a clouds of glory protecting them. They had the Red Sea took care of all of Pharaoh's army. Why did they need to leave with weapons? And in some ways, as they crossed the Red Sea, the nation of Israel was born into the world. They went down to Egypt as a family, but they left Egypt through that birth canal of the Dead Sea, of the Red Sea, and they were birthed as a nation. And at that moment, it's like, okay, how does God want to create the nation of Israel? Let's make a snapshot. He wants to see the nation of Israel holding arms. He doesn't want them necessarily to use them, but he wants them to have the ability to use them. He wants to create...
To be willing to use them.
Willing and able, meaning they're coming out of Egypt. And now it's like, what does my nation look like? Does he have blue eyes? Does he have blonde hair? What does the nation... Let's take a snapshot of the nation that God just created as the nation of Israel is birthed into the world. And it's important that we were armed. We came out ready and willing and able to fight. That needs to be where the Jewish people aim themselves. You know, a few months ago, we had this conversation, debate really, with one of the greatest Chabad rabbis in the United States of America. And it was on this issue, I just couldn't imagine, we are a part of a different religion. I'm like, look at what's happening here. We are being attacked by Hamas. We're threatened by Hezbollah. Who knows what's going to happen with Iran? It's a wake-up call for every Jew in the world now. Every young man should be training, should be working out, should be learning how to shoot a gun, should be ready to defend themselves. We need to represent King David and his mighty men in the world. That's the ideal. We need to be warrior poets, just like King David. And the rabbi was like, no, I hope it doesn't go that way. We don't want any more violence. We just want the truth to be on our side. And I'm like, the truth to be on our side?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't get to that.
The truth was on our side when we were in the gas chambers in Auschwitz. It was true that the Nazis were evil and that was wrong. That truth didn't help us. And so when you see like the story of Passover culminating with the nation of Israel being born with weapons in their hands, that is an eternal message for Israel, that we have to be strong, ready, willing, and able to fight, and not just shoot down their drones. What we need to be able to do is take them out. I heard the most awesome idea.
I mean, someone said to me, they said, what needed to happen when we saw those maps with the little dots of their missiles on the way and their drones on the way, we needed to send our F-35s and absolutely eviscerate them before their missiles even arrived. That was the window of opportunity. Right. We're in the middle of being attacked. Fight back.
Exactly.
We're constantly missing the moment because of fear and this crippling, unquenchable desire to have the world love us and support us. And we think that if we're just sort of weak and kowtow, then they're going to love us. When in reality, everybody loves the winner. Everybody loves strength, or at least they respect it.
But I'll tell you something else. Aside from attacking the locations where the Iranian missiles were shot from, because we have all
oil fields. That's what,
not only oil field. That's another great idea. The third idea, which I thought was really brilliant, was to target every one of the Iranian police stations. You target their police stations, and then the nation of Iran has a chance of actually overthrowing the Ayatollah. Destroy their internal defense systems, not just their military defense systems that are attacking us, but their own internal defense systems, because the vast majority of Iranians do not want the Ayatollah as their leadership.
Are you 100% sure of that? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I've heard a lot of the time, the vast majority of Gazans don't want Hamas and they just want peace. The vast majority, it's just not true. Okay, now maybe it's true with the situation with the Iranians.
The situation in Iran and Gaza is the same.
Okay, maybe not. But I just want to know where these words.
There have been multiple attempts of trying to overthrow.
I remember that. The Obama administration could.
There has never been an attempt to overthrow the Gazan regime since the disengagement. Hamas took power and they took over the schools. They took over the media. They took over the mosques. And the people were just cheering Hamas. They had an 80% approval rating before October 7th.
By the way, we're doing our spiel right now, but I'm looking at all of the names, looking at all the faces. I do want to throw a question out there a little bit later. I want to hear from you guys. What do you think? Do the Iranian people support this? We've seen massive millions of people rallying, chanting, death to America, death to Israel. Like, it's not like just a small sliver like the Hashemites. That's not what this is.
Well, I'll tell you, I just saw earlier today on Twitter, there was protests in Paris, and there were more Iranian flags than Israeli flags. They were like supporting Israel, and all of these Persian expats that left Iran were siding with Israel. And I believe, and I don't know because I haven't been to Iran, but from the intel that I've heard from other people, it seems as though the Iranian people would be thrilled to have the Ayatollah gone. If they could press delete and remove them and reestablish their king that was in place or some other leadership, they would want
you mean the Shah.
Or some other leadership.
Someone did actually post a funny little comment. They said, this is the first time there's been direct flights to Israel since the Shah was overthrown in 1979, which is a cute thing to say, a nice way to look at it, right? There's direct flights.
The drones. I did not understand how big the missiles were until I saw a picture of the missiles with people next to them. Because the first picture I saw was the like a big missile floating in the Dead Sea. I'm like, that's kind of cool. There's a missile floating in the Dead Sea. But I didn't really appreciate it. How huge it was. And then I saw another picture in some field, I think somewhere in the Shomron. And then you see people next to the missile. And it's like, it's literally as big as a 747. It's massive. People do not understand that had 10 of those rockets hit heavily populated civilian areas, there would be thousands of dead Jews today. If one of those rockets had hit, can you imagine? And all of them were taken down and no real casualties were done to Israelis in any major population. It's truly like, I don't know what to say. Hallel. Someone needs to be saying some sort of praise to the Lord because that is miraculous.
Yeah, there's something interesting also that happened here that I think was, you know, yesterday, like it was Sunday, the day after the missile attack, I went out and I'm just seeing people in restaurants, people talking. I don't know if you had that moment. And I was like, am I the only one that's walking around with my head spinning that the entire chemistry of the world has shifted? We had a direct attack from the octopus's head itself, not like the tentacles that we've been playing with for the past 30 since 79, really, of the Hezbollah and the Hamas. And sometimes we actually forget that they are actually proxies and tentacles of Iran. Iran itself came and attacked Israel. The entire equation has changed. Iran has said, now any attack on us, that's what they came out and they said, any attack on any of our assets anywhere that Israel's been doing, when you attack us in Syria, we're going to attack you directly. That's what they said. Things have changed now. Because we look and we're like, wow, what a victory. They didn't land any missiles. But they're like, no, what a victory that we had all of these missiles and ICBMs in the entire country of Israel and all the people in their little bomb shelters.
And no one retaliated.
And no one retaliated. That is, I'm more on their side. You know, I can't help but to feel that the state of Israel, I'm picturing like the generals in the Israeli army, like Gallant and whatever. And there's this 2,000-year-old chess grandmaster of the Ayatollah playing this ancient chess that they invented, and their chess 2,000-year-old chess masters playing chess against Gallant, who's like a third grader learning how to play chess. That's what this feels like. Like, they really know what they're doing. They're playing a long game, and they know what they're doing. But then I zoom out, and then I look at the Ayatollah, and he himself is a chess piece. And Gallant is another chess piece, and Hashem is moving those pieces around. The Ayatollah may think he's brilliant and he's the best grandmaster chess player, but he doesn't know the creator of heaven and earth, the God of Israel. And by the way, just a little, I don't know if this is interesting or insightful, maybe I shouldn't even say it, but I've noticed that the world is already starting to draw this moral equivalence between Israel's alleged attack in Syria, which killed these 13 high-ranking Iranian officers, you know, the commanders in the Quds Force and the IRGC. What was it? Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahidi, right? This guy was the architect of October 7th massacre, and he was responsible for arming Hezbollah. And by the way, I say alleged because Israel hasn't taken responsibility for that attack, but come on, obviously they did. But anyways, so people are playing this morally blind game that they do regarding Israel and Hamas, meaning that with Hamas, Israel sends in a precision assassinated strike as much as possible against terrorist leaders, to which Hamas responds by barraging the entire population, aiming at kindergartens, and somehow us targeting their terrorists and them targeting babies and children in kindergartens and the entirety of the population is like, oh, the cycle of violence.
Did anyone condemn Iran's missiles that were shot onto us? I didn't hear anything from the UN. 300 giant missiles aimed at civilian populations.
I think I remember hearing something.
I would like to hear a little bit more, that they launched 300 missiles that could have killed tens of thousands of innocent civilians, and the world's like, all right, let's move on. And let me tell you something
else. No, but I want to make this point.
Okay.
So here Israel bombed a building adjacent to the Iranian embassy in Syria, meaning that it wasn't even the embassy. Because they're saying it was their sovereign territory, it was their embassy. It wasn't their embassy. Not that I personally would have cared if it was their embassy or even if it was in the heart of Tehran itself, but it wasn't. It was a targeted strike against terrorists, and their response was to genocidally attack the entire population of Israel. And well, by the way, a good question, what about the Arabs in Israel? Right? Aren't they concerned about harming their fellow jihadist Muslims, which Israel is full of, right? After all the, the only serious injury, by the way, do you know who it was?
In Israel.
Yeah. A Bedouin girl in the Negev, a Muslim Bedouin girl. But they don't care about that. They don't care about them, and they never did. You know, the way that these Iranians, if you look up Iran in Wikipedia, do you know where Iran comes from?
The word?
Yes. Aryan. That's where it comes from. They are not Arabs. They are Muslims, but they are like, they are of the Aryan persuasion. That's how they see themselves. That's going back, meaning it's all the way back to Haman, to Hitler. That's the connection. It's that sort of strain of virulent, pure Jew hatred. And that's what it's about. So it's like they look at the Arab Muslims, the Palestinians, quote unquote, and they just are repulsed by them. They don't care about them at all.
They sent that little girl to heaven.
It doesn't even matter. They're a subspecies to them. They don't care about them. They don't care about the Palestinians. All they want to do is murder Jews.
Eliyahu Yusan said that they look at the Palestinians, or the so-called Palestinians, and it's like they're disposable cups.
Yeah,
kill them. Maybe they'll fight some soldiers. Maybe some of them will die. It's just like they're little pawns in their game.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's just an interesting thing that, of course, the same dynamic of Israel bombing an adjacent building to the Iranian embassy in Syria and killing 13 generals who organized the terrorist attack against Israel. And how does Iran respond? With the same exact playbook as Hamas responds when we do targeted assassinations against their people. And there's just such a moral blindness of the world to conflate the responses as if they're the same thing. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, here's what I have. What the world doesn't recognize yet is that everyone lives in Israel. They just don't know it yet. And I saw, it's so weird, a week ago, this weird looking Christian bishop pastor with like all of like the real garb of like old school Catholic Christians popped up on my YouTube feed. And I'm like, oh, why is that happening? All right, whatever. I saw like two clips of him. I wasn't like very taken with what he was saying. And then yesterday, I see that same Christian bishop in Sydney, he's in the middle of one of his ceremonies. Some Allah Akbar jihadist walks in live on the stream, stabs him, and like is killing him in front of the whole audience there. And it was like, Sydney doesn't get it. Sydney is Israel. And so is London, and so is New York. The whole world is Israel. They just don't know it yet. And the same tactics that are going to be put on the Jews, it's just a matter of time until those tactics are then used on Christians. And so I have one last question for you, and it's not an easy one. But a part of the Passover sort of avodah, the Passover service, like the service of the heart that we're meant to experience in Passover, is the people of Israel saw all the miracles of the 10 plagues. And then they're asked to take a sheep and slaughter it, and then take the blood of the sheep, put it on the posts of their doors, skewer the sheep. You couldn't put it in your oven. You had to skewer it outside and literally take the god of the Egyptians, kill it, put the god, the blood of their god on your doorpost, and skewer
you
it.
You couldn't cook it inside and say it was chicken.
Right.
You had to skewer it whole outside, like, your roast. You had
to display your utmost
contempt
of their god and belief in our god. That was what was demanded before the final redemption. And I feel like there's something that we need to learn in our generation about that. And I've been thinking, okay, what is my sheep? What is this thing that Israel is worshiping, that Israel, that the world is worshiping, that we need to be like, world, we're slaughtering your sheep, we're skewering it, we're taking the blood of your God that you believe in, that you find so holy and so important, and we're going to paint our doorposts with the blood of your God because we believe in our God, because we believe in truth, because we believe in upright morals, and we believe that Israel has... Like, there is no more moral battle than for the Jewish freedom in the land of Israel. And so coming up on this Passover that's right now, what is our sheep that we need to slaughter? It's like complicated because I don't really know.
So I can't help but to think that the sheep that we need to slaughter is our obsession with what the world thinks about us, trying to curry favor in the eyes of the nations, trying to convince them of the righteousness of our actions, trying to be the victim, listening to what they have to say, believing in our hearts that that our fate lies in their hands. And really coming to terms with, no, our fate lies in Hashem's hands, and we need to do what is right and true and courageous and not be crippled by fear and being consumed with what they think. That's, to me, is like, that's the sheep. That's really what it is. And so we need to say, if the world says, no, you can't attack in Rafah because blah, 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 blah. No. For the next day, Tehran should have looked like northern Gaza looks right now. October 8th. That's what should have happened. The minute there are missiles on the way from Iran, we need to go and level Iran. Level Tehran. Level them. Their oil fields, their police stations, everything. But what are they going to do? What are they going to respond? That's not our department. Our department is to do what is good and what's right. King David went against Goliath because he was so consumed with the desecration of God's name. Every day that goes by, that those hostages, those women that are the daughters of Israel are being raped as sex slaves by Hamas terrorists. Every day that goes by is emasculating for the Jewish people, is an embarrassment, and it's a desecration of God's name. We shouldn't let one more moment go by without going into our prisons, taking on every Hamas terrorist, and in front of the entire, broadcasting to all of Gaza. Every moment that goes by, castration of them. Let's see them going to their 70 versions. That's what's going to, and we have to be, listen, it's not in our nature. We're compassionate people. We're loving people. Our dream isn't to kill them. Our dream is to live in brotherhood and harmony with them. That's what we want. But if we need to fight and we need to be brutal to bring back the daughters of Israel that are being raped and the honor of Israel that is being dragged through the mud in the eyes of the nations of the world as we're cowering at the thought of Iran and Hezbollah, and what will Biden think and what will the European Union think, that's when the world will actually respect us. They're looking to us for leadership. You think that the people in Paris and in Europe really love the jihadis? They're terrified. They see it's happening in their countries too. In their hearts, they're looking at us and saying, please, Israel, step up. Saudi Arabia is saying, please, Israel, step up. The world is waiting for real leadership, moral leadership, military leadership. That's what they're waiting for, and that's the sheep we need to slaughter. What? Say a word.
Dude, that was awesome.
Okay.
I really agree with everything you said there, that you could not have said it better. All right, guys, I think that's it for tonight.
No, but let's hear something. Hey, Tana, could we hear a question or two? Could we engage with our beloved friends here in...
Yes, please. We have multiple people with their hands up. I'm going to try and go in order of how they requested, and we'll see how much time you have. But first of all, thank you so much for always bringing amazing stories and very, very inspirational and unique perspectives. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So Renzo had his hands up first, but I don't see his request anymore. So if you want to request again, then just do so. Meanwhile, I'm going to go to Carolina. Oh, sorry, forgot to.
Wait, Tana, I remember you mentioned before that you wanted to give some sort of constraints. You wanted to say like some sort of guidelines about people if they're asking questions or making comments or what. I remember you wanted to say that last time. Is that true?
So please only one speaker unmuting your mic at a time. We're going to go in order. And if you could keep your questions short, just so that we can get to as many questions as possible. Carolina, you're up.
Oh, I just wanted to say totally agree with you, Jeremy and Ari. It was a miracle. Even the U.S., that SM-3 anti-ballistic missile, it's the first time it was used in combat. And all that stuff flying over your house is amazing that nobody was seriously hurt with all that debris falling. So I just thank God. And the problem with the U.S. is we live a world away. And unless we're directly threatened, we're pacifists. And only 3% actually ever serve, even Joe Biden. So they're weak in the knees and they're spineless. And we need to support our Israeli brothers.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I think one thing that sort of blows my mind about Americans, and this, particularly the isolationist right or conservatives, is the delusional belief that there's any way that like you can sit this one out to the side. I mean, it's pretty clear to me that something is going to happen, whether it's Israel's response to Iran or Iran's response to Israel's response to Iran. Something is going to happen to get this out of control. It's going to be tremendously globally destabilizing. The air passages, the airports are going to shut down, particularly over this part of the world. The ships, the shipping, the products, there's going to be, you know, there could be bread lines. There's going to be tremendous fear. And this is going to be around the world. To think that, like, this is just isolated to the Middle East is, I just think, delusional.
You know, I want to tell you a story that there was a billionaire family that came to Israel, not Jewish and not Christian. They're just good Americans, and they're not like very religious people. And they wanted to come to Israel for a very specific reason. They articulated it to my friend who guided them throughout their trip here. They wanted to know, was this an Israeli Gazan thing? Was this a political thing? Or is Israel actually fighting evil? And their conclusion was that Israel is fighting evil. And if Israel is fighting evil, it's just a matter of time until that evil ends up on their doorstep. So they want to proactively go out, support Israel in their fight against evil. And I thought that that was absolutely astute, because it's just a matter of time until it hits Carolina, until it hits California, because when evil rises, it takes over, it spreads. And so Israel is just like the defensive line. We're the front lines. And so it's like standing with Israel is standing for your country.
Right. Yeah. Next. Yes. Thank you, Carolina, or her husband.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go to Renzo now. He had his hand up first. Marie, if you could just mute your mic, that would be great.
Hello, guys. Excellent speech. And my question is coming from a Jew who grew up in a household where we were twice a year Jews, Pesach and Rosh Hashanah. My question for you is how we can bring the religious Jews and secular Jews more close together in our effort to live happily in our land from the river to the sea without being terrorized constantly.
Okay, so your question is, you know, from what I understood, you're saying, how can we make it where the religious and the secular love each other and live harmoniously without being terrorized? Meaning, when we are terrorized in our war, that's when we're
terrorized by the Arabs. I mean, how we can bring ourselves, the Jews, close together, religious, non-religious, secular, whatever you name it, not to be terrorized by the Arabs? That's my question.
Yeah. Okay, you go ahead, Drew.
Yeah, because when we are terrorized by the Arabs, that brings us together. I think that there's sort of, you know, the image or the drama that Israel played out in the stories of the Bible. It's called Aliyah LaRegel, that all of us would come and march up to Jerusalem and meet in the temple. Now, what did that represent? That represented something much deeper than just a building. It meant that the Jewish people all throughout the land had a united vision. They had a united goal. They had like the peak of a mountain. Imagine if all of Israel is at the bottom of a triangle and all of us are working to get to the top of that triangle, to make Aliyah la Regel, to get to the peak of the triangle. As we get closer to our united vision, we get closer to each other. And right now there are two visions for Israel. The secular Zionist vision was to just create a safe place for Jews after the Holocaust. And I think that October 7th was a wake-up call saying, this is not a safe place.
How are you doing, guys? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I would like to add that that's not the vision for all secular people. As you, Jeremy and Ari, might know, I am secular myself. And I'm personally completely the opposite. Like, I think that... I think just like you, you know, that the Temple Mount should be rebuilt and that Israel should be the Jewish homeland and all Jews should come back to Israel. So you have all sorts of secular Jews.
Well, no. So I think one second. Let me say. I want to say this. But I think he's. No. I want to say this. I think that if you want the Temple Mount to be rebuilt, I think it would be worth reassessing your definitions of words of what it means to be secular. Meaning, in my mind, you could be religious and you could be observant. And those are two very different things. One is observant, where you keep all the commandments in sort of a dry ritualistic way, but you're not actually religious. It's not actually a spiritual endeavor and a connection to God, but it's a dry ritualistic completion of commandments. And then you could be like you, where you love God and you're connected to the nation of Israel on a deep spiritual level, but you don't do all the commandments. That's not secular.
But that's the thing. I don't believe in God. I do believe in the Torah, however, but I don't believe in God.
I just want to clarify what I was saying, because I don't mean to say that everyone that's secular has the same ideas. Well, I think that most people in Israel, they don't even know why they're here. They're just living here and they were born into a certain reality. They were born into a certain family. They were born into a certain ideology, whether it be from a kibbutz or in the city or in a settlement. I'm talking about the founders of the state of Israel, like Herzl, like Echad Ha'am, the original thinkers of Israel. Their primary motivation of the secular Zionist movement of the late 1800s and the early 1900s was to just create a place where Jews could be safe in their land. And I feel like that vision needs to be revamped. We need to set a new goalpost. We need to set a new vision that can unite secular, religious, orthodox, observant, non-observant. And I feel like we're getting closer to a vision that can bring us all together. But I think that that's what's lacking now, is a unified vision. And when people don't align and they don't fall within that vision, then we can sort of lift them up. Meaning right now there's Haredim that are saying, I'm really doing wonderful things for Israel because I'm learning Torah. I don't need to serve in the army. And like, is that the united vision that Israel has? Meaning we have to sort of figure out a way to, someone needs to come up with a like manifesto, kind of like what Herzl did in his time. Someone needs to write a new vision statement for Israel that has the ability to unite the nation.
I just want to say one other thing also. The broadcasting headlines that convey the reality that the secular and the religious in Israel are totally at war with each other is a lie that is intended on creating a narrative that is not true. Meaning when you go to the Israeli army and you see the cohesion and the love and the respect between the extremely religious and the extremely secular, also in the country in general, it really is not what the media is conveying. I want to say that point also.
All right, on to the next one.
Renzo, that was a fantastic question. I really appreciate you coming up. Thank you.
Thank you, Renzo.
Yeah, thank you so much. Mickey, you're up next. Please unmute your mic.
Thank you very much. Hi to everyone. Itana, Spike, and Jeremy, I can't read your name very well. Jeremy and Ari, sorry, it was on the top. Yeah, I'm going to make a question. It's kind of Kabbalistic. Has to do with the energies of when people, maybe you don't have the answer, but I just want to make it because I'm curious. Because I do believe when someone curses us, the Jews in Israel, you're going to receive a lot of bad things against you. Years ago, there was a dictator in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, cursed Israel, and he was devoured by cancer. He died in a little time after he announced that he had cancer, and then Nicolas Maduro was his successor. My question is, it is true in a certain way, like from energy-wise, that someone that is anti-Semitic, and what is written in the Torah, because I do believe in the Torah and in God, I'm not Haredi, but I'm a conservative Jew, and I do believe a lot in energies. So that's my question. That does it really happen in a certain way to also our enemies, like not the Iranian people, but the Iranian regime, which is connected, as you brilliantly explained, that is connected to the Nazis. So do you think that in a certain way that I believe what happened during the weekend with the Iran's attack was sort of a miracle, as you said also, it is, that 99% of the missiles were launched together with all the drones and everything, in spite of the help that we received from Britain, the US, France, and Saudi Arabia, and Jordan. But anyways, I think that there's something behind superior power that is going that actually helps us and it protects us. That's my question.
Yeah, so I would love to answer that question as best as I can. To me, what's so beautiful about Judaism is that it is a scientific experiment that's 4,000 years old, meaning we can see truths of the world that have been tried and tested and tried and tested over and over and over again. So you can see the nations that have come against Israel. And you can start from the Canaanites, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Medes, the Greeks, the Nazis, just over and over again. Every nation that has come to curse Israel, to hurt Israel, they are all gone now. But when you look at the nations that have blessed Israel, that have supported the Jewish people, it's amazing to see the difference between North Korea, that kicked its Jews out, and South Korea, which accepted the Jews and elevated the Jews, helped the Jews out. Look at the difference between those two countries. I think that the United States of America is the most prosperous country in the world right now because of all countries in the history of our exile, there has been no country that has been kinder and more welcoming to the Jewish people than America. And then what happened? America was blessed. And so when you think that the creator of heaven and earth chose the people of Israel, an attack on Israel is an attack on God. And so it triggers a curse because you're cursing God's chosen. God chose to the people of Israel, brought them to the land of Israel to reveal his sovereignty in the world, to reveal his oneness, to reveal his closeness, to show that he runs the world and not the United Nations. And as long as the Jews are in Judea, we are the living testimony that God is in charge and not the European Union. And so when people come and curse Israel, then what they've done is they've just made their own bed, and that will boomerang back and ultimately curse
them. That's right. Throughout history, you see that, you know, he who blesses Israel will be blessed, he who curses Israel will be cursed. That's true, but also by your own words, meaning Haman built the gallows to hang Mordechai, and he was hung in those very same gallows. Pharaoh decreed that the sons of Israel would be killed. His sons were killed really by his very own decree. There is a certain type of symbiotic relationship where, and really when I see the time between all of history to some degree, but also October 7th to right now, this is a time of refinement where people are going to decide, do I stand with Israel or against Israel? There's really nothing in between. And the only reason someone would stand with Israel during this time is because they believe in the power of goodness and righteousness and truth, that trumps the secular survival of the fittest type of energy. What? Okay, we're being notified that we have to wind this down. Israel Digital Army, it was a great honor. Etana, thank you so much. The other guy that I'm not supposed to name, thank you so much. Spike, Renzo, Who are some of the other big heroes here? A lot of big heroes in this group that are making this happen. We're so grateful to all of you. And stay in touch.
If you guys want to follow up, thelandofisrael.com, that's where more of our content is. You can email me at jeremy@thelandofisrael.com. Email Ari@thelandofisrael.com. Yeah, can DM me on Twitter now that we're getting more active on Twitter. Thank you all so much. Have a beautiful night. We'll be in touch next Tuesday.